Captain America turns, but without Bucky. Disney suits draw battle lines. The House of the Dragon heads to Civil War. Plus, it's our birthday. All that and more on this week's Multiverse News. Welcome to Multiverse News, your source for information about all your favorite fictional universes. My name's Matthew Carroll, and with me on the panel today, we have J. Scotty St. Clair. What's happening, J. Scotty?
Hi there. To co-opt a line from the Beetlejuice trailer, the scoots is loose.
He's had that one in the pocket all day. He's
been like, I cannot wait to say it. It was either that or, hey, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana. So.
I think you chose wisely. I do. And Haley Hobbs, what's happening, Haley?
What's up? I don't have any cute quips this week.
That's all good. And Jay Sisson.
Yeah, I'm on spring break, living my best life, just partying over here every day. This is nice. How life should be. Not having to go to work, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel bad. My niece is on spring break now, too, and I feel like we should do something fun, like a trip or a, you know, something. The beach, you know? It's spring break, but we're still working, and it's a really busy week for us, so I just feel bad because we're like, go do something. I don't know. Do some schoolwork. I don't know. It's no good. No good. Well, we're getting ready to celebrate our one-year Multiverse News anniversary next week, and you can be a part of the festivities. Join the live show April 2nd at our YouTube channel, youtube.com/strandedpanda. It's at 7 p.m. Central for our standard recording, plus some prizes. We'll be giving out prizes. So come find out more about that. We're also planning a short Zoom hang after the show, so it's definitely one to tune in for. If you can't be there that night, give the show a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify, screenshot the review, and share it on Twitter or Instagram, and tag us in that share, and you'll be entered to win exciting prizes. You know, give us a little, like, shout-out. It's a year. Give us a birthday present. Shout us out by giving us a 5-star review, screenshot it, and then let the world know that you gave us a 5-star review and that you liked us. And we're going to give some pretty fun prizes away next week. So, yeah, we would really appreciate it. You guys excited for the big one-year anniversary show?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We're also giving away 2 gift cards to patrons. So if you are thinking about joining the Patreon, now is a great time. You'll be entered to win automatically. So hop on over to patreon.com/multiversenewscast if you want to get in on that.
Love it. Yeah. Big, just going to be very generous and just try to give all of our people that have listened this year some prizes and stuff this week. And we're excited to do it. So go join the Patreon, patreon.com/multiversenewscast. Give us a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify and like screenshot it and share it on socials and tag us so we know. And we're going to get a winner, a few winners, and then we're going to give away prizes on the stream too. So don't miss it. April 2nd, 7 p.m. Stranded Panda on YouTube. So you guys ready to turn to this first story?
Oh yeah. Let's do it.
All right. Captain America Brave New World star Anthony Mackie broke the news that Sebastian Stan's character Bucky Barnes will not appear in the fourth Captain America movie. The duo garnered great accolades for their chemistry after the Disney Plus show The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which saw Mackie's character Sam Wilson come into his own as the MCU's new Captain America. Mackie's comments also alluded to no return for Daniel Brühl's character Baron Helmut Zemo. How mad are we to be potentially robbed of more dancing Zemo?
Mad might be a bit of a stretch, and I think we've all been on the internet long enough and social media long enough to kind of understand that it's a little bit of a place of knee-jerk reactions. It can be a little bit of a bubble, and it can be a little bit of an echo chamber.
No.
No. Not the internet.
To that end, I will admit some guilt, and when I first saw these headlines, I think I reacted the way a lot of people reacted, and I was mad, I was upset, and I was like, hey, how can you do this? Even thinking about the fantasy draft, I was like, oh, thank God this movie actually got pushed now, because I would have said, you know, Bucky in Cap 4 is an assured thing, but as I dwelled on it and sat with it and, you know, contemplated it a little bit longer, I do think there that it makes sense, and we can't really take this at face value. First of all, this is just Anthony Mackie, you know, making these statements. So this could totally be a case of Marvel lying to us. There could be totally the potential for Bucky to show up in a lesser role, maybe like a cameo, maybe a post-credit scene, and you know, Anthony Mackie is doing the right thing and lying to us and burying the lead. That's kind of my hope. But on the other side of the argument there, it totally makes sense for Sam Wilson to get his own Captain America movie without the baggage of Bucky and, you know, Bucky's relationship with Steve. Like, obviously, the MCU has committed to this new version of Captain America. He's no longer the Falcon. He is our Captain America. So it makes sense that they kind of want to trailblaze forward with this character in a solo outing and really let him, you know, shine and flourish in the role. All of that said, not including Zemo, does rub me the wrong way. They had such, you know, great chemistry in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier and his limited role there. But I guess my hope is, again, you know, maybe they're lying to us. I really hope that if Zemo doesn't show up in Captain America 4, I definitely hope he shows up in the Thunderbolts. If not, it's a little bit of that instance where, like, hey, Marvel, we know that you're, like, paying attention to the fandom. This is one of those things that you kind of have to make happen. And if you don't, it's a little inexcusable.
Yeah, we kind of think about the old guard and how the old guard, a lot of it moved on after Endgame, specifically Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. and Scarlett Johansson. And we're kind of thinking about these stars getting to this point where they've been in this franchise for over a decade and they're starting to become A-list talent and they're starting to get more roles and they're starting to branch out and leave the MCU. And a lot of times when we think about that, we really focus on like the original six, like we focus on those original Avengers, and that's what we're talking about. Like, we got to replace them. We got to focus the universe on new people and stuff like that. But it's happening with all of the other side characters as well. I mean, you think about like Sebastian Stan as an actor, like he's been in this role for a long time. Like, Captain America, the Winter Soldier came out a long time ago, and he was in Civil War and he was in Infinity War and he did a show, you know, I mean, he's been around for a long time. And then you start thinking about like Elizabeth Olsen, and you start even thinking about people like Chris Hemsworth and Benedict Cumberbatch. Like, these people aren't going to be in these roles forever. And I think like hearing this, you know, Sebastian Stan, he's been busy. Like, he hasn't been in the big productions a lot, but he's been busy. Like, he's been in a lot of movies. And I think it just kind of, we always have to remind ourselves of that. It's like, these are actors, these are actresses, which are, they're getting more exposure. They're put into these big budget movies. Like, this really puts Sebastian Stan in the spotlight. And this reminds me of a couple weeks ago when we talked about Thunderbolts. We talked about like the rumor is around this movie, he's probably not super front and center in it. Like, he's in it, but he probably doesn't have as much screen time as some of the other characters. And so when I heard this, I immediately thought of that. It's like, yeah, I mean, the Winter Soldier as a character, but more specifically Sebastian Stan, I think we probably won't be expecting to see him as much anymore. And I think when you think about just these old stars getting older, starting to move on, starting to branch out a little bit more, that kind of helps us reframe why maybe we're not going to see these characters as much anymore, which is sad if you're a fan of the thing, but also it's just the nature of the thing, right? As you're bringing in these people and you're building them up and you're putting them on the map. But when they've been in a franchise for 10, 15 years, at some point, they do start to dial it back a little bit.
Yeah, you bring up the kind of moving on of the old guard and this being a big... We've had a lot of, like, new characters introduced, but this is the first, like, full taking up the mantle. Well, I guess Yelena, but she hasn't been in a movie yet by herself where she is the new Black Widow or whatever. It's just going to be an interesting thing to, like, figure out how to balance putting enough of the old MCU. We talked about a little about MCU cast too. Like, do you include Steve Rogers in this movie? You know, maybe these other characters are missing, but maybe Steve Rogers is in there as like even a cameo as like a mentor figure. You know, how much do you balance the old with the new and moving on versus trying to put in a little fan service for people that are here from the beginning, you know? And I think that he deserves this movie. He deserves it full stop. And it, like, all to himself, if that's what they want to do. But I could definitely see them wanting to sprinkle a little bit of that old in there too. Someone from the universe that we haven't seen lately.
I tend to fall more in Scotty's camp of the Sam Wilson Captain America does need to stand on his own in a film. The Steve Rogers Captain America, he kind of is a solitary figure by nature of his being the man out of time kind of thing. So he doesn't always need a team around him. And I wonder, because we don't know, I mean, we really don't know a ton about Captain America Brave New World. We don't know how many other supporting heroes are going to be in this movie or not. So I kind of wonder if this is going to be like Sam Wilson's solo outing as Captain America. But in the comics, he really is one who does surround himself with friends and with a team. And so I kind of think we might see the story pendulum swing that way. Like he thinks he can do it on his own. And then he ends up being the leader kind of a thing, which I think would be nice. Hmm. And that way too, still Anthony Mackie gets this big solo film that he absolutely deserves.
Yeah. That's I like that idea as an arc, like the idea that he'd be like feeling the need to prove himself as like, no, I'm Captain America. I don't need these other people's input. But then like realizing, no, like part of Captain America is being a leader. I like that a lot. That's kind of a fun way to sort of handle it in a meta. Like in the meta while handling it on the screen. Up next, things are heating up in the wild world of Disney's board of directors. Nelson Peltz, an investor with Trian Partners, is angling to flip two board seats at the entertainment giant. In an interview with the Financial Times, Peltz was quoted saying, "Why do I have to have a Marvel movie that's all women? Not that I have anything against women, but why do I have to do that? Why can't I have Marvels that are both? Why do I need an all-black cast?" These incendiary comments don't come as a surprise upon the knowledge that former Marvel Entertainment boss Ike Perlmutter owns 79% of Trian Partners' $3.5 billion of Disney stock.
Oh boy, can we splice in Bad Blood by Taylor Swift real fast?
She would sue us into oblivion.
She wouldn't. She'd never recover. On our side.
We would never recover.
We would never. We'd be done. This is our first and only live stream to YouTube.
We would become podcast indentured servants to Taylor Swift.
This is a lot of old wounds coming up for up to the chopping block. This is kind of what this boils down to. So Ike Perlmutter, as we said, was the president, CEO of Marvel Entertainment back in the day, right? Back in the 90s. And he, you know, is kind of like Avi Arad in that he has similar viewpoints on, we make things that will make us money, period, the end. And to them, that means things that will sell toys and will bring in revenue that way. And typically, that's straight white male heroes in the Marvel world. Well, back us up to 2019, 2018, whenever they started talking about making Captain Marvel and Black Panther, and Ike Perlmutter didn't want to make those movies, actively lobbied against Kevin Feige and said he wouldn't make those movies. And so Bob Iger, who was the CEO of Disney then, had to step in and tell Ike Perlmutter, you are hands off on Marvel Studios these days, and I'm taking control of it, and Kevin Feige will take control of it, basically. So what's interesting about this dynamic is that Perlmutter still has all of this controlling interest in Disney as a company. It makes me think of the election situation we're in this year. Like, things are just brewing and brewing and brewing, and I feel like Perlmutter is ready to swing an axe while he thinks that Disney is in a vulnerable position, given all the things that we've talked about over the last year or so. They've had some poor, you know, shareholder trust. Their products haven't been doing super well compared to years past. And what an opportunity for somebody like Ike Perlmutter to say, see, I told you so. And so of these 12 seats that make up the Disney Board of Directors, Nelson Peltz, you know, kind of acting as a front man, in my opinion, for Ike Perlmutter, is trying to flip two of them. I've been in a hostile board situation before. It's completely different than this kind of corporate situation, but I know what it can be like, and it's really tough. And so what's nice to know about all of this is that a lot of support has come out for Bob Iger, excuse me, and the candidates that he has put forth for the board. George Lucas penned an open letter saying, taking a swing at Nelson Peltz, saying that something like it takes skill to make magic. I'm not quoting it correctly, but basically taking a shot at the fact that Peltz said he has no entertainment experience or media experience. Grandchildren of Walt Disney and Roy Disney have come forward to show their support for Bob Iger, as well as Michael Eisner, who was, I believe, who Bob Iger took over as from a CEO from Disney, if I'm remembering correctly. And Michael Eisner is a big reason we have all the Disney parks we have, for instance. So I don't know that we're necessarily in a perilous place with this, but it's very, very interesting that they're kind of doing this hostile takeover in the board sense. It's not uncommon. If you're trying to throw some political weight around in the way you feel, you know, Nelson Peltz is pushing back on things that he sees as, quote, woke or whatever being done at Disney. Doing it at this level is a really popular way to try to invoke some power right now. So, yeah, this is kind of a big story, and I'm curious to see what happens.
It really scares me. I can't not think about Elon Musk and his purchase of Twitter for fairly similar, like... So, I will say, I wonder about these quotes and Nelson Peltz and, like, this becoming promoted and stuff. I wonder, like, it seems very bad, but it also I could see this, like, promotion of these quotes being the other side going, like, look how bad he is, you know. I don't know anything about this guy. Obviously, those quotes are problematic. But it just scares me that, like, billionaires can come along and just be like, oh, Disney owns a lot of your favorite properties, a lot of our favorite fictional universes, as we talk about around here. And it's like, now just a billionaire can come in and go like, I'm going to irrevocably change it. I'm just going to do it because I have that much money. And I just think that is trash. It's just terrible. So just really scary. It reminds me of the Elon Musk situation with Twitter. And it just reminds me of like, someone just swinging their money around and hurting the communities and the art that we love. And it's really, really frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, Disney's always been political, and they kind of probably will be political, whether or not, you know, you want them to for a long time. They seem to always be in the crosshairs of particularly certain, like, sides of the political aisle that see them as... you know, I think one side sort of sees them as not doing enough for a certain political agenda. And I think the other side of the aisle tends to categorize them as, like he said, being woke or whatever. And, I think Iger was sort of brought in a way to try to mend those two worlds together a little bit. I think if you're Bob Iger, I do wonder, like, if he had the opportunity, cause he was retired, if he had the opportunity to go back and make that decision again, if he would decide to stay retired, based on just kind of like how rocky this transition has been, this handoff from the Chapek era, which was short, but did change the trajectory of particularly Marvel, and other Disney properties in some pretty, pretty huge ways, to now be sort of trying to balance these two worlds together. But yeah, I mean, they'll always be, I think, in the political conversation in some way. They'll always be kind of like a something that someone on any side of a political aisle trying to prove a point will point to and say, there's an example of what's wrong, you know, with entertainment or whatever. And so it does have that kind of, the company itself is so large, it does have that unique position of having to find a way to deal with that, right? Like, find a way to deal with, like, responding to that in a way that doesn't necessarily cave, but doesn't necessarily, like, let itself be too affected by that type of noise too. So that it's a unique position to be in. The date to watch on this is definitely next week, April 3rd. That's whenever there's an annual meeting for the board of directors, and you'll probably see some news come out about it at that point. Now, overall, I think Iger is still a relatively popular figure. Like you said, Haley, like, people have come out and voiced their support that do matter, like loud voices within that company. But also, too, like, I think just overall speaking, like, I think he is still a a figure that people do respect and do, like, especially in the entertainment industry. So yeah, there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot up in the air here, and it's bound to probably get worse before it gets better. But if you're looking at this and you're trying to make sense of it, there's still a lot of that story to be written, I think.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that Nelson Peltz probably hasn't seen Oppenheimer, which is a real shame because that's got like more straight white guys than you can shake a stick at. So you should definitely check it out. But you know, as we've talked about, like, you know, insider business news on this show before, with like, you know, media conglomerates performing their mergers and what have you, the easy comparison has always been Succession for me. But this scenario, like I talked about it in the chat, but it really felt like, you know, Ike Perlmutter is the Lewis Strauss of the situation, and Nelson Peltz is his William Borden, and he doesn't want to be, you know, caught holding the knife. So if you can get your guy to kind of, you know, stir up and shake things up, Matt, I do think you make some great points about how this totally could be the other side. Like, hey, he made these terrible comments. Let's put it in the limelight. Let's, you know, showcase how awful they are. But on the other side of things, it just clearly shows how out of touch this guy is, because to give a little context, he's an 81-year-old businessman without any, you know, media experience. Not to politicize things too much, but he has rubbed shoulders and supported a certain presidential candidate, kind of went back and said he regretted that, and then doubled down and supported the candidate anyway. But the fact that he's like citing Black Panther and the Marvels, which it just shows like how out of touch he is, because it's like,
yep,
Black Panther was a wild success. How are you going to compare that to the Marvels, which, you know, it was a flop. I don't think it deserved to be a flop. I think it was a quality movie that had other things working against it, including just the overall, you know, reception to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But again, it's like, you know, whether or not this was the other side putting him on a pedestal to kind of like make him look more foolish or not, like, one way or another, this guy's comments are just completely out of touch and completely out of line, in my opinion.
Also, should be said that Black Panther is the sixth highest grossing movie in North America of all time, and Captain Marvel made over $1 billion, and Black Panther and Black Panther Wakanda Forever do not have all black casts, and the Marvels and Captain Marvel do not have all female casts. So,
true.
You know, it is, that's something that just needs to be said and needs to be kept in mind as well.
Anybody that says something like, why do we need women? Not that I have anything against women, like, immediately no. Immediately no.
Yeah. It's just frustrating to use this era of Marvel has had more diversity. And it's also met some challenges, but I don't think the diversity has ever been the problem. Like, the challenges of these movies have been, you know, problems with, you know, strikes and COVID and writing issues and directing issues. Like, some of these choices that are made have nothing to do with the diversity of the cast. And it's really frustrating that I think somebody mentioned it earlier. You can point it and go like, oh, see, there's the problem. The problem with these movies is this. So let's try to get in there and fix it. And it's like, no, it's just really frustrating.
Well, and I think later in the Financial Times interview, Peltz very not directly says something about, you know, Kevin Feige. Maybe he needs to be looked at, essentially. I'm totally paraphrasing and making it up, but it's something like that. And it's like, oh, you mean the president that led the $30 billion franchise? Okay.
Right. Right. And they say something to the effect of, they've lost sight that these movies are supposed to entertain before anything else, which there's something to be said for that. Like, I think there are times when movies can be too message driven to the point that they lose the entertainment factor. And like on these big budget movies, you have to worry about entertaining, but like that's just not even the case with any of these movies. These movies, like, they just have women in them. They just have a black cast. I just think that they're overblowing the idea that like Marvel is this insanely woke company that's making these insanely woke movies. They're like, they've got some diversity. They're just like kind of matching the vibe of what where the culture is. And it's just like, yeah, the fact that they think that's so far over the line that they want to put billions of dollars into pulling it back the other direction is insane to me. And it's just more stuff about where we are as a society right now. It's a bummer. Okay, moving on. I'm sure we'll get more on that story in the coming weeks. The Dynasty of House of the Dragon will continue in season two, and viewers got a taste last Thursday when competing trailers dropped for the show. The fictional civil war in the story extended to the trailers, with a black trailer focused on Rhaenyra and a green trailer focused on Alicent. In the Dance of the Dragons, who will you pledge your fealty to?
I always think it's interesting whenever a company decides to create a civil war in the fandom and just see like what that does for engagement. And sometimes you can do it well. And other times, like, I don't know if this one necessarily did that. It was not super trending. It was not super talked about online. Because when you inherently put out two trailers, you're asking people to choose. And sometimes they don't want to choose. They just want to see a trailer. And so I think sometimes that can sort of backfire a little bit. With that being said, I thought it was a cool idea to sort of highlight what this season is about. That you're highlighting this idea of this sort of war between these two sides and factions. And then creating trailers that are supposed to, in a way, show the point of view of each side, I think is a really interesting idea. Overall, I thought the trailers were good. I think it sort of shows us where this season is going with season two of The House of the Dragon. It seems like it's going to have a lot more action. It's going to kind of bring these two sides to a very like it showed off the budget, you know, it seems like, which I think is cool. Like, to me, I'm excited for it. I think it really shows off what the show is all about.
But whose side are you on, Jay?
give me green in this case. Yeah.
You're going green?
Yeah, yeah. You know,
you're going green.
The Hightower or the
here we go, civil war on the cast.
The green are the Hightowers. The black are the Targaryens. I'm all team black. I don't know. I guess like, you know, the in every way, like the characters are less like yeah, I'm just all team black. I don't want to get too much into it because we're not an after show and I don't want to spoil it, but team black, baby, is all I'm saying. And Alicent is a snake in the grass. And her father's worse. And the thing about Game of Thrones, though, and the thing that I keep thinking, like, when I watch those two trailers, I am so team black. Because I just find those characters more interesting. I find those characters more fun. I find them more correct. Like, even like the lineage is more correct. It's just like in every way I support them. But I know Game of Thrones, and they're going to punish me for that. And we are going to get into the season, and they're going to do things that I'm going to be like, oh, I'm so team black. And then they're going to do things that I just do not, I can't get behind. And it's going to be painful. And I'm going to eat my words.
That's what that show's so good at, though. Like, it's good about making you, you know, sort of look past those things for the sake of your favorite characters. Like, yeah, I know, but there's a greater good at stake.
Yeah, as soon as you're sure you're behind someone, like, watch out. They're either going to become a monster or they're going to, like, die a untimely death and definitely not win the Game of Thrones. That's exciting. I'm excited for the season two. We covered it on Pandavision last year, and I think we'll do it again this year because it's a great show. Really, really fun to cover, too. Okay, so we're going to move on to our break real quick. But before we do, the Patreon, patreon.com/multiverse newscast. We mentioned it at the top, but next week's our one-year anniversary. We're going to give away prizes for all kinds of things, but one of those things is we're going to give away a couple pretty big gift cards to our patrons. So if you are a patron, you're automatically entered in. So go to patreon.com/multiverse newscast and throw us $4 a month to keep the show going. Keep us afloat. If you've been listening for a year, come on, guys. You got $4. such a small little bit. And we'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Multiverse News. And first things first, we talk about our Spotify poll. Not patron poll. Spotify poll. And this week, our question was, search yourself, would you choose the light side or the dark side of the Force? And, like, I somehow knew this was going to happen. I don't know why, but we got the light side got 51% and the dark side got 48%. Like,
yeah.
What is going on?
Everybody say
out
what
here?
You voted for. Just say it.
I voted Dark.
I voted Dark.
They
I'll
have way cooler
it.
Powers. Okay, they shoot lightning. Like, that's way cooler. You know, they seem to be winning all the time. Like, they can't get rid of them ever. Like, and the Jedi are, you know, I don't know. The Jedi are kind of like, I don't know, they're kind of lame. Like, they're always losing. They're always like, we're the best protectors of the galaxy, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, two people overthrow them. I mean, come on. Like, give me a break. Like, they kind of seem like they're up their own butt so much all the time about everything that they're not, like, actually, I don't know, protecting the galaxy or whatever. And rant.
Jay, you should read the High Republic stuff.
Jay, I am watching you, buddy. First you're Team Green, and now you're a Sith over there. I mean, Lord.
Jay's got a darkness to him.
Yeah, I just know what I know what I would choose. I know what I would choose in the moment. I know myself.
All right. Yeah, I voted light side, and I based it off of, like, video games. Like, if you have a choice in a video game to take, like, the pacifist route or the violent route, like, I always choose the pacifist route the first time around. I'm like, I know that these are digital constructs, but I still feel bad about inflicting pain upon them if I don't have to.
Okay.
Scotty's playing Grand Theft Auto. He's, like, driving on the right side of the road, stopping at stoplights.
He's like,
yes, officer, I am obeying the law.
Also, the Jedi, they're like, I won't kill you. I won't kill you, but I will horribly maim you for life.
Right.
That's true.
All the time.
Rip you away from your family,
like,
and
all the time.
You.
They're like, I won't kill you, but I'll cut your arm off. I won't kill you, but you don't need legs.
Only if you're trying to murder folks. Like, come on. They're defending people.
I mean, I'd rather have all my limbs.
They seem a little self-indulgent to me.
They seem
got that big tower right in the middle of Coruscant. Like, who do you think you are?
Oh, I hate that. It's so ugly.
Dark fascist leadership, or they seem a little bit big on themselves. Like, I don't know, man.
Sounds like government to me.
You're a good egg, Jay Scotty.
It's funny, like, we talked about real politics earlier, and we were both just like, we were all just kind of like, eh, you know, here's the facts. And now we're talking about Jedi versus Sith.
They're like, the dark side.
No, you're wrong.
I just have to disagree with Scotty that the Jedi are pacifists, because I, oh, no.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right, yeah.
They be lemon people. It's not okay.
Yeah, they're pacifists. Their primary thing is to go out and fight in the galaxy. So, yeah, I don't know. At least at that point that we've seen. That's the thing with the High Republic, though, right? Isn't it supposed to be a little less like that? I don't know. You read these books.
Really. It's like the Jedi at the height of their power, kind of. Well, it's complicated. Read the books. They're really good.
Okay.
Hubris. Hubris always surrounds the Jedi. Let's just say that.
The fall of the Jedi has often been compared to the fall of Rome. So I think you could kind of look at, like, you know, the high point of Rome and maybe the Roman Empire and maybe compare that. Maybe. Hmm. I don't know. I haven't read them.
We haven't gotten to that part just yet, but yeah, it's okay. Coming.
Okay. Well, I'm really looking forward to the Acolyte. Just see a different era and learn more about it. Okay. We're getting into the lightning round now. I'm going to read a story. Everyone on the panel can claim that story by shouting out their name. And if you are first, you get to tell your take about that story. And per the entire lightning round, you only get one rebuttal. So use it wisely.
We'll see. See how I'm feeling. See how I'm feeling tonight.
Up first, Pirates of the Caribbean producer Jerry Bruckheimer told comicbook.com a sixth movie in the franchise is confirmed, but called it a reboot.
Scotty. Yeah, this news kind of, you know, had me spinning my head a little bit. I thought about it, and we actually haven't had a Pirates movie since 2017, you know, going on 8 years ago, which is kind of crazy. But it's one of those franchises I haven't had too many opportunities to talk about, but I absolutely love The Black Pearl so much. It was so influential on me as a young moviegoer. It was like one of the first instances outside of like The Lord of the Rings. Like, me and my friend saw it in the summer of 2003, and we were like, we got to go back and see this thing as soon as we can. That being said, I often compare the franchise to the Transformers franchise, where it had a really, really good, solid first movie, and then everything kind of after that was diminishing returns. I think you can even look at Jurassic Park and compare that kind of similarly as well. But, you know, I do think Jerry Bruckheimer might be kind of just, like, you know, talking out the side of his head a little bit, because he was talking about how rebooting the franchise would be easier than bringing certain actors back. So while they may be focusing on different characters, I do find it kind of hard to believe that Pirates would have a full hard reboot at this point in time. Like, I think it just kind of makes sense to continue the franchise, but look in other corners and focus on other characters. But we will see. That's really all the news that we have. There's not a lot of details to go on at all.
The first trailer dropped for Fede Alvarez's upcoming installment of the Alien franchise, Alien Romulus, which currently has a release date of August 16th this year. The film takes place between Alien, which debuted in 1979, and Aliens, which debuted in 1986.
Scotty, I'll go 2 for 2 on this one. I really, really love this trailer. I think, you know, had this trailer come out any other year when it didn't have competition from like Deadpool and Wolverine and, you know, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, this would probably be my favorite trailer of the year so far. It really tapped into the body horror and the claustrophobia of those first couple of films. Plus, we know that, you know, Fede Alvarez has the blessing of both Ridley Scott and James Cameron going into this thing. So everything that we're seeing on display, Kaylee Spaney is an actor that's kind of definitely been up on the rise, but nothing that I've kind of like seen her in has really attracted my attention that much to kind of check her out. But she looks like a total badass in the same lineage as like, you know, Ripley. So I'm definitely excited for this one.
A new Marvel video game, 1943 Rise of Hydra, is set for a 2025 release and dropped the first trailer last week. The title, which hails from Skydance New Media and Marvel Games, will focus on characters Captain America and Black Panther, who at the time was King T'Chanda, also known as Azuri. The game will be set in World War II. Matt, this game looks awesome. I am totally going to play it as much as I have time for. the thing that my one take on this is it's a terrible name. Just an absolutely atrocious name. Like when you got like Captain America and Black Panther, like there's just so much better. Like put them in the title of the thing. It feels really silly to me to call it 1943 Rise of Hydra. I think it's burying the lead and hopefully the game will get enough promotion that it'll like overcome that, but I think it's a trash name.
Scotty with a rebuttal. So Mark Bernardin, who's on the Fat Man Beyond podcast, he actually wrote for this game and he had been teasing that he was working with Marvel on a project but couldn't reveal. So to find out that this was the project is pretty exciting. That being said, other things that we learned about this trailer, because I don't think there was any gameplay whatsoever. It was all cinematics and cutscenes, which look, you know, absolutely stunning. But the other thing we learned is that we're going to be playing as, you know, Steve Rogers, Azuri. We're also going to be playing as a Wakandan spy and then a member of the Howling Commandos, Gabriel Jones. So when I hear that, it does have me scratch my head a little bit. It's like when you have the opportunity to play as Captain America and Black Panther, why would you want to play as these other characters? You know, I do have faith. I have trust that they're going to, you know, use these characters for the right purposes and maybe, you know, have some really heartfelt moments and kind of, you know, highlight that dichotomy between regular people and these, you know, super soldiers. So definitely one to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. It reminds me, you mentioned that, it reminds me of in the Spider-Man games, the moments where you play as Mary Jane or whatever.
Oh, and yeah, like, that's a good call.
I find that so dumb. Or Peter Parker, even.
You're just like, literally you're sneaking Spider-Man. Around with no powers. You're just like, you're just yeah, like hiding behind something. Okay, time to move. Like, something else. Yeah,
I got to go put the thumb drive in the thing. Like, I just like, no, come on. Let me swing around. This is stupid. The Neverending Story, the beloved fantasy novel from late German author Michael Ende that was famously adapted into a cult 1984 film, will be revived with a joint venture partnership between Michael Ende Productions and Seesaw Films. The adaptation will span multiple live-action films. Nobody?
Who put it on the show?
My Neverending Story growing up? I watched it like once or twice and was kind of traumatized by it.
Yeah, I've never seen it. There's scenes I know it's in that beloved. Movie I don't want to see again.
Well, Jay, you've seen it, so you have to say something.
I mean, I will say Seesaw Films does Slow Horses on Amazon Prime, which is a great show. Amazon Prime, Apple TV Plus, which is a great show. So that... It gives me a little bit of credibility here. I don't know if that story translates as well to the modern world. Like when it came out, it made sense and it caught on, but like to sort of reboot that and bring it to the modern world, I just don't know what kind of interest level there will be. So I'm especially hearing that it's going to span multiple films. Like they got franchise in mind with this thing, you know? So I guess it makes sense. Like Hollywood does not like to give up on IPs. They do not like to give up on franchises. But I don't know. This is kind of a wait and see for me. I'm not a huge like proponent of that franchise or that movie anyway, but I guess if you're a hardcore fan, even that, I don't know if a hardcore fan is like, give me another one of these. Like, I think a lot of times hardcore fans like want the old one. Like, they don't want to reboot it with, especially with multiple films. So I don't know. I think you're going to get a lot of different mixed opinions on this announcement.
A film based on the popular video game franchise The Sims is an early production with Loki director Kate Herron attached to direct. Margot Robbie's production company Lucky Chap will produce the feature.
Jay, did you all play The Sims growing up?
Mm. Played a couple of them.
Nope.
I did a little bit. Like, it was more my sister was into it, and then I kind of like got into it by proxy. And if you don't know, like the point of The Sims is you're literally kind of like running people's lives. Like, you're building these like homes, and like you're like sending them to their jobs. And I know as I'm describing it, you're like, why would you want to do that? Just go live your real life. Like, I get it, okay? But like, it was a franchise that was built over the course of multiple decades. I mean, the franchise has been around for over 25 years, probably at this point. It's a computer game, right? And when I hear, oh, you're going to make a movie about The Sims, it's like, okay, but like The Sims is literally just about like real life. Like, nothing supernatural happens in it. Nothing. Like, you're literally sending people to their jobs and like putting a TV on the wall and like taking care of the kids. And like it's literally life. It's a life simulator, right? And so it's like, when I hear that, I'm immediately like, well, that's dumb to make a movie. But then I hear that you got Kate Herron involved, Margot Robbie, and like the Barbie thing comes to mind. Like, how mm-hmm. you tell me, oh, you're going to make a movie about Barbie, the doll. I'm like, well, that's dumb. But then you see the movie Barbie, and like, they're so self-aware about like, this is a movie about a toy, that is what makes the movie great. So like, now I think I have this renewed perspective. It's like, all right, well, you're going to make a video game about people doing life or whatever. Okay, that's dumb. But then you hear, okay, let's reframe it after seeing Barbie. And it kind of makes me think like, all right, if you're self-aware about what it is, you can make something that does say something really interesting and cool. So I think with that in mind, like, I'm a little bit more intrigued by it and kind of interested to see what you can do with that sort of idea.
Yeah, rebuttal. I'm right there with you on that. I think that the talent attached has me completely on board. And then thinking about it through that lens of Barbie, like the way that they use this toy is just really talk about the social issues. Like, the idea of The Sims is this sort of like, when you think about The Sims themselves, they have this sort of character to them, and they get frustrated and they get angry and they fall in love and you sort of root for them, but they're also basically just like, you're their little puppet master. And you can absolutely see a lot of social commentary about like possibly work culture or like the way we go through life and the way that life sort of just like piles up on us and we just kind of have to keep doing the next thing we have to do, you know, and that can be really, really challenging and hard to deal with and sort of just adulting, I guess, and like living life as it's sort of scripted for you, you know. It's like you look at your week and you're like, did I do anything that I chose to do this week, or was it all just like things I decided 2 years ago and I've been like, just like, you know what I mean? Like, you really can like lose yourself in like, top down, got to go to work, got to do the thing, got to take care of the family, got to cook dinner, got to, you know, and I just like, I can totally see a really good movie coming from that. And I really respect Kate Herron. And I think she could do a great job with this. So, and again, Margot Robbie's connection to Barbie, totally, totally with you on this. Last week, we reported a rumor that Scarlett Johansson was being circled to star in the upcoming Jurassic World film. This week, trades have reported that she is officially in talks for the film.
Scotty?
Haley?
Oh, go ahead, Haley.
No, because I have to say to you, Scotty, I know why they're calling it Jurassic World.
Okay.
It's because that's like what everything is on social media, so when places are tagging it in their posts, that's what it says.
Ah, okay, that makes
and yay
sense.
Scarlett, I'm excited about that.
Yeah, Hopefully this time next week we're updating the story again and saying that she's signed on.
Jurassic Universe is Jurassic totally Universe. The next
like
thing.
It has to just keep
it
going.
It has to be
right?
Jurassic Universe.
Yeah, right, right.
Jurassic Galaxy.
Jurassic Infinity.
Jurassic Solar System.
No, you're thinking too small. You think it's too small.
Okay. You're right. You're right. Shame on me.
The first trailer for Beetlejuice Beetlejuice has dropped. Michael Keaton, Winona Ryder, Catherine O'Hara are returning to the franchise, and Jenna Ortega, Willem Dafoe, Justin Theroux, and Monica Bellucci are joining this for the sequel. The film debuts in theaters on September 5th.
Scotty?
The Scoots is loose!
Yeah, had I been the one to, you know, come up with this title, I think I would have said Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice,
oh,
Beetlejuice
that's so
is a pretty good,
good
title.
That's
right?
So good.
that's good. It's real good.
But yeah, this trailer was effective. It didn't do a lot. It showcased the new characters, and what it did really effectively is just kind of create a vibe. You know, you had all of the hallmarks back to the original film. We got to see, you know, the landscape. We saw like the red barn structure around the bridge. We get to see the house, and then you have Henry Belafonte's, you know, classic song proceeding throughout the trailer, and then the trailer just ends on the perfect note, getting to see Michael Keaton again right there with Winona Ryder, and just one line, the juice is loose, and that's all you need to know.
Love it. Jack Black recently told news outlet Joe that he is ready for a sequel to 2003's musical comedy School of Rock, also noting that for a sequel, he would want the White Lotus creator Mike White, who wrote the first film, to return.
Jay, I love School of Rock. I think it still holds up to this day. If you watch it now and you've never seen it before, I think it still is as good as it was then. There was a cast get together a couple years ago, I think, like Jack Black posted on social media, because if you know the basic plot of the story, he's like a substitute teacher and he's a musician and he takes over this class of these very young kids and he basically like teaches them how to be a band throughout the movie, and all these kids at the time are now grown, and so he reunited with a lot of the cast and they posted about it and it blew up. Like, people were like, oh my gosh, like, I would love to watch a sequel to this movie. Like, it's so cool to see you guys together. So I think there is interest there. We're really in this like really cool era of Jack Black's career where like he's doing Bowser. He's in like this like Minecraft movie that's coming up, like this Kung Fu Panda role that he's done, just got a fourth movie. Like, he's traveling all over the world promoting all this stuff. Like, so he's like really doing a lot right now. And I think this would be a cool circular moment for his career. Like, this would be a cool sequel, and I think there's a lot of interest in it.
Scotty with a tiny butt. I was just gonna say, he mentions reteaming with Mike White as the writer, but I really hope that if this, you know, does come to fruition, they bring back Richard Linklater as well, because I think they have a pretty good partnership. They did, you know, School of Rock together, and then they had this other film that came out in like 2016 called Bernie, which I really, really like as like, you know, a black comedy. And I also just like to see, you know, Richard Linklater kind of return to his roots with some comedy a little bit. He's been doing a little more eclectic stuff the last few years.
Peaky Blinders creator Steven Knight confirmed that a film in the franchise is currently scheduled to begin filming this September, and Cillian Murphy will return to star, reprising his role from the series.
Haley, I'm not saying Margot Robbie made this happen, but Margot Robbie might have made this happen, because in her Actors on Actors interview with Cillian, she was like, so I'm a Peaky Blinders fan, like, would there be more to the story? And he was like, I don't know, maybe. And I don't know that Cillian's necessarily the best like faker in interview situations, so I kind of, and who knows, I don't know how like far in advance those Variety things are filmed, so, you know, I think Margot Robbie's gonna be queen of the world soon or something like that.
Yeah, for sure. The first trailer has dropped for The Penguin, the Batman spinoff series starring Colin Farrell. The series is expected to debut on Max this fall.
Scotty? Yeah, this was a solid trailer. I certainly liked what I saw. It obviously looked very, very grounded, which, you know, Matt Reeves, the Batman, was. But I did find myself missing a little bit of something. And while, actually, do we know if this is a prequel or is it a sequel? Do we know when it takes place? Has that been?
I think it's a sequel. I think that's been confirmed. Like, it takes place after the Batman.
Okay. But at any rate, he kind of, you know, has some dialogue that alludes to his beginnings and kind of gave me, you know, some Goodfellas vibes, like Goodfellas vibes, like, you know, from the earliest I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. But the one thing I was kind of missing is, you know, Colin Farrell had these like really big moments in the Batman. Like I think about when he was there with Batman and Gordon, and he's the one to realize it's like El Rata. Like, come on, am I the only one thinking here? Like, he has these big moments, and like, this was like surprisingly like subdued in his delivery. So hopefully they're just holding back and we're going to get some of those moments in this series.
Yeah, I'll use the rebuttal to say like the Sopranos connection is very strong here. I mean, you even have like the HBO account on Instagram is already tweeting out like Tony Soprano and Colin Farrell side by side, like, and you know, so they're definitely like playing with that idea. But yeah, one of the things that I think about is like how spread out this universe is going to be. I mean, the Batman we just talked about last week got pushed back. That movie's not going to come, or the Batman 2 is not going to come out until 2026. So think about that. Right. Like we're gonna watch, we're going to watch this series this year. And then, man, we've got like, I mean, that'll probably premiere in the later half of 2026, maybe. So you're thinking like 2 years after the series before you get the Batman 2. That's a lot of time to think about. But yeah, I liked that Batman movie. I liked Colin Farrell in the role. I'm really, really interested in this. This is definitely an anticipated series for me.
Tiny but, I do think he was more subdued in this trailer, but it reminded me a lot of the first scene we get in Daredevil, where you just sort of get the sense of the character, where it's just him talking to screen and like sort of just having like a mission statement for who he is. And I just thought that was a cool way to handle this character. Cause I mean, in the Batman, I think he's great, but I don't feel like we really get a sense of him as like his motivation and him being the protagonist or at least the, you know, main character of this show. It seems like it would be, it's really good that they're like giving him this sort of like understandable if misguided motivation to be like a legend to his community or something. I think that's really cool. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire led the box office this weekend after a $45.2 million opening in North America. The new film catapulted the franchise total to more than $1 billion.
Scotty, anybody watch this thing?
I didn't have time to go see it.
Not yet.
Yeah, this was one of the few new movies that I did not catch on opening weekend because I haven't seen Afterlife. And had I been able to find Afterlife on a streamer where I didn't have to pay a premium to watch it, I would have, and I would have checked this one out. But that wasn't an option. So I know Ghostbusters is a franchise with a very fervent fandom, but it's always been one that I've always kind of felt like on the periphery of. Like my biggest exposure to the Ghostbusters was the cartoon in like the late 80s, early 90s, the real Ghostbusters, where like Slimer was their mascot. So that, and then I drank a lot of Hi-C Ecto Cooler in the 90s, and that's about the extent of my Ghostbusters fandom.
Tiny but I wanted to go see it, but I just, between basketball and I had company this weekend, I couldn't make it happen. So I've seen like mostly nice reviews about it, though. People seem to have just enjoyed kind of the nostalgia of having the older cast back and the blending of the two, the new cast and the old. So I will see it eventually.
Sources tell Hollywood Reporter that filming on the upcoming third season of HBO's Euphoria, which was originally scheduled to begin soon, has been delayed. Issues include scheduling as well as how to write the script around the aging stars who were in high school when last season ended.
Jay, yeah, of course, because it was already stretching trying to convince me that these characters were in high school whenever it was on in that last season. So, yeah, and I think it highlights just the cast is really in demand right now. Like, this show is led by Zendaya and Sydney Sweeney, who's having a moment right now, and Jacob Elordi, who's kind of like getting big as well. So, like, you have like this cast, which is going to be torn in a lot of different directions. When the show started, it wasn't really like that. And so this show really put those actors in a position to take on more roles. And now they're extremely in demand. And you've got to figure out a way to like write this series. So I think there's probably a time jump involved here. There's probably like something going on. And I mean, it's going to be a while before, if you're a fan of that show, it's going to be a while probably before you see another season of this.
Insiders who have seen early versions of Joker Folie à Deux have called the film a jukebox musical.
Scotty. Matt,
oh. You go for it, Scotty.
I was just going to say, we talked about the budget for this thing ballooning to $200 million a few weeks back, and I think this is probably a pretty clear indication as to why. Music rights cost a pretty penny, and I think, you know, the director, Todd Phillips, has probably earned, you know, a little bit of clout to get whatever songs that he wants.
This bums me out, because I really was thought it was going to be an original musical.
It kind of bummed me out, too.
Yeah.
If you don't know what a jukebox musical is, it's using existing songs like Mamma Mia. They used all of ABBA's songs. Mm-hmm. That's what a jukebox musical is. And yeah, I wanted to hear Lady Gaga sing some original tunes.
The the reports are too that it's somewhere around the neighborhood of 15 songs that are in this film. So that's a lot. I mean, 15 cover songs in a movie, you got a lot of ground to cover there.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a lot.
I suspect a certain Steve Miller Band song will make the cut.
No, I hope not. That's too on the nose.
Timothée Chalamet inked a multi-year feature film deal with Warner Brothers for future projects that he will star in and produce. Chalamet has been box office gold for Warner Brothers lately, with Wonka raking in $632 million and Dune Part 2 at $575 million and counting.
Haley, Timotei getting his payday. It's funny. The article says he made $8 million for Wonka. He'll be making a lot more from here on out.
Yeah, absolutely. As a part of Lucasfilm's month-long Star Wars promotional celebration called Imperial March, Dairy Farmers of America True Moo will release Star Wars True Moo Blue Milk. It is described as a delicious vanilla-flavored milk with blue food coloring, and you can get it starting April 17th.
Jay, I am continuously trying to find things to get obsessed about on this show, and I found it. All right, this is it. This is going to be my new thing, and they better sell it somewhere near to me so I can show up drinking it on this show. But I just love Star Wars fans. Like, this is, they literally in A New Hope are just drinking from these blue glasses, and it's this blue liquid, and it happens for like 5 seconds, and for some reason it's just been a thing. And that's just so Star Wars, to like pick a random character in the background and get obsessed with them. Like, think about Boba Fett. Like, just, oh, this guy with the jetpack's so cool, and now we've got like a Boba Fett show and all this stuff because people were just so obsessed with a background character. And this is the ultimate, like, getting obsessed with something in the corner. It's like, no, that milk is blue, I gotta know why it's blue, when in reality it's probably not that deep, but it's so Star Wars to me, and I just cannot wait to buy this. And I don't even like milk, but I'm gonna buy it anyway just for the joke.
Tiny butt. You have to drink it out of a Tupperware cup, because that's what those were.
Totally. Because
of course, because it was the 70s and they still sell Tupperware, so I expect for you to drink out of Tupperware. They also sell it at Galaxy's Edge, like in Olga's Cantina. They sell the blue milk. It's one of the drinks you can get. So, of course, they're going to continue to monetize this. Star Wars.
I was thinking Scoots could drink it out of his Dune popcorn bucket.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I'll do that right after I get back from the Tosche station and grab a couple power converters.
Martin Lawrence and Will Smith are back in Bad Boys Ride or Die. The trailer dropped today, and the movie will premiere June 7th.
Scotty? Matt, did you watch this trailer? I felt like this was right up your alley.
I did. Yeah, I guess. I haven't really seen, I think I've seen the first two. I never saw For Life. And the history of these movies is interesting, because they talked about making a third one forever. And obviously, I think Martin Lawrence and Will Smith's careers sort of diverged. And Will Smith became like the most famous man ever, and then Martin Lawrence, you know, he's good, but like he's
Big
just
Mama's
didn't hit those
House
heights.
Rebound and things of that.
I love Martin Lawrence.
Right, and so I always found it funny that every time you hear people them talking about this movie, it's always Martin Lawrence, like, oh yeah, we're gonna make another Bad Boys. It reminds me of They were talking about making the new Bill and Ted, and I was just like, there's clearly like one of those that's hard to get lined up, and the one that's not, you know. I don't know. Anyway, so in the, what was kind of interesting about this trailer is it reminded me, it gave me real Fast and the Furious vibes for this franchise. Like, it's always been kind of a big bombastic, but they've been cops. This one looks like they're like on the run and they're going for like some sort of big like heist mission with like militaries they're fighting and stuff. And it just feels like they're trying to make that Fast and the Furious shift where it's like they're going superhero like, and I think that's kind of funny. Could work. Could absolutely work. A new documentary called The Beach Boys hits Disney Plus beginning May 24th and about the iconic Californian band.
Haley, I love the Beach Boys. I have really fond memories of listening to the Beach Boys as a little girl, like going hanging out with my dad in the car, whatever we were doing, running around, doing errands, and the Beach Boys would be playing. So I like this, and I think it's interesting. Disney is, you know, we had the Beatles documentary kind of thing that was on Disney Plus, and then they've got Taylor's Eras Tour concert film, and now they're doing this Beach Boys documentary. So I don't know what the, like, stake they have in music is. I don't know if they have some kind of interest in one of these record companies. I don't know. But it's kind of interesting that they're just continuing to diversify their content. You know, they have National Geographic, they have Star Wars, Marvel, etc. And now it's like, and music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird. Scooper Jeff the Insnider Snyder has claimed Spider-Man 4 is on track to begin filming this fall, with Zendaya reportedly returning and Justin Lin on the short list of directors. Matt?
Haley?
I feel like this is great news.
We're like, right? Huh? Did they make... I thought I saw a headline where Sony and Marvel came to a new agreement. Did I make that up in a fever dream? Yes?
I don't know if we had that official.
Okay.
Yeah. I've heard rumors about that. There's definitely been a lot. Ever since Madam Web, it seems like a lot is pushing us in the direction of, like, Sony's getting less and less... they have less power in that relationship when they realize, like, they can put, you know, $200 million into a movie and it makes 40 or whatever. Like, they're realizing, like, oh, maybe just keeping forcing out spider-related content isn't going to keep working. So, like, Venom worked, but nothing else has. So maybe we need to just, like, play ball with Marvel a little more. It seems like, and so since that's happened, there's been a lot more talks about, like, behind-the-scenes conversations with Marvel. And I'm hoping that this is true and that maybe they, maybe Marvel really got the power back in the relationship, and they're going to do something more consistent with Spider-Man. I'd really like to see them, make a deal that goes for more than one movie. And like Spider-Man should be one of the head characters of the MCU right now. And because he's not owned by them, he kind of can't be for them to still make right. The money they want to make. It's a real bummer.
It's the Sebastian Stan thing though too. Like I don't know how much longer Tom Holland wants to keep doing this. I mean, he's getting up there. Like he's voiced in the past recently that he wants to do other roles, wants to take breaks from acting, you know, wants to kind of explore other opportunities, and you know, he might be one that's kind of looking at some of these Spider-Man roles as being some of his last ones. So I think that's something to keep in mind too.
Yeah. It's possible. I never know. He's talked about that. He also talked about wanting to leave acting and just work on raising a family and stuff. And like, that's all well and good, but it might just all be like playing hard to get. Like, oh, I don't really want to be in the most popular franchise. Like, I'm good. And then that's the only way you get the money truck is if you act like you don't want to do it. And so I never know for sure if that's like PR or if that's real.
I think Tom Holland is an emotional little creature. I feel like that's a fair statement to say. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
he gets in these funks. He's had some like serious reactions to some of his projects, so I think he can be reaction.
Yeah, you're dead on stuff. On that. Like, he played a guy that gave up drinking, and then he actually gave up drinking, and then like, yeah. And then like, did he like
which is
call?
Fine.
He like called the exact. Oh yeah, but it just shows like he does get very invested like in the things that he's
yeah,
doing.
Yeah, and that's
he,
what I mean.
Didn't Thank he you. Like call up executives of Marvel and Sony back when they were fighting over Spider-Man?
Yeah, when
he's
like
please let me be in the MCU, please.
Yeah, Zendaya is probably like, could you play it cool? Like.
And that's why we got like the last two Spider-Man movies. Like I'm thankful for that. He is why him crying on the phone to Sony executives is why we got No Way Home. It's crazy. Lastly, Jeremy Allen White is in talks to play Bruce Springsteen in an upcoming film about the making of his 1982 album Nebraska. A24 is currently in talks to make this movie.
Jay, I've been watching The Bear season 2, been trying to catch up, and I can't think of anyone better to play Bruce Springsteen than Jeremy Allen White. The story behind Nebraska is actually a pretty interesting story. Bruce Springsteen recorded it, you know, really at the height of his popularity on just like a small little mixtape recorder. It's very like stripped down. It's very acoustic. It's kind of a really interesting moment in his career where he tried to do something very different. But to me also, it kind of highlights just the move to do a lot of these films. We've seen a Bob Marley film this year. We've already heard about the Beatles, 4 films, all from the different perspectives. We talked about that. You've got the Michael Jackson film coming out this year. Like, so there, it does seem to be a trend in Hollywood, and this just seems to kind of be continuing that.
Tiny Butt Timotei is going to play Bob Dylan, or is currently filming a Bob Dylan biopic. So yeah, there's like this movement.
Yeah. You're totally right. I didn't realize who Jeremy Allen White was when I read the story. Jeremy Allen White is such a good call for Bruce Springsteen. That look, man. He has the look.
Oh yeah, he looks just like him.
The acting, his affect too is perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Okay. Well, that's Multiverse News for this week, you guys. We do want to remind you that if you're listening to this, if you're in the cohort that listened to the very end, we appreciate you, but know that next week, that means you're in like the top, 50th percentile of this show or whatever. Like you're a true multiverse news hound and you're hanging out here with us. So you stuck through to the end. So you are the kind of person we need to be here next week for our 1 year anniversary show on YouTube, youtube.com/strandedpanda. And it will be going live at 7 p.m. Central. And so check your local time zones. But we'll be alive.
Your local
and,
time zones.
We're going to be giving away prizes. And listen, I'm terrible at time zones. I always have to like look up in my time zone, what time is this? I'm terrible at it. I always do it backwards.
Hey, I got the East Coast representing over here. We're going to be an hour behind.
No, you're an hour ahead, Jay.
That's what I meant. See, I'm struggling too.
Yep.
I'm disturbed.
But so come out next Tuesday night, 7 p.m. April 2nd. We will be recording, as always. We're doing it a little earlier because we're going to get on afterwards, create a Zoom link, and let everybody join in and hang out some afterwards, do a bit of a Zoom hang with people to celebrate the 1 year. We would love to hear from you guys. And we'll be back soon. Let's go around and tell them where they can find you online. J. Scotty, St. Clair.
Yeah, I just want to take a quick moment to encourage everybody, like, help us get the word out, you know, share the show, like the show. If you're catching us on YouTube, like and comment on the video, let people know that we're making the transition from Twitch over to YouTube, and just, you know, help us do it up and celebrate, because this show has been a ton of fun to make, and we're super proud of it, but it's a fair amount of work. So we really want to do this big and make it a big celebration and, you know, celebrate all of you as much as we're celebrating the show. So on that note, check me out. Animation Deliberation, the podcast that takes action animation and cartoons seriously, but not too seriously, wherever you get your podcast.
And Haley Hobbs.
Yeah, I'll tack on to Scotty's plug and remind you to do your 5-star review and screenshot it and share it to Twitter/X or Instagram and tag us. And you'll be entered in the contest to win some cool prizes. I almost said a naughty word. And otherwise, find me on Source Pages. We are going to start our X-Men comics this week. We're just a little later this week than normal. We're going to read Executioner's Song, which is a crossover event from the 90s. It's super fun already. And then check Scotty and I out on our final Dune cast on Avengers Assemble. It was a chaos cast, and it was super fun.
It was.
Awesome. And Jay Sisson.
Yeah, and I'll also tack on to the tack on that if you don't have Twitter and Instagram and you're like, I want to review and be entered in the contest, just you know, do what you can. Do a review, take a screenshot of it if you want to put it on Facebook or something, and then send us an email. We're at multiversenewscast@gmail.com. You can just send us an email and be like, hey, I shared this on Facebook. I don't have Twitter. I don't have Instagram. And we'll get you in. Okay, so just as long as you're reviewing and sharing it with some people, we'll make sure you get in. So with that being said, though, I'm on Commute the Podcast, where you can learn something interesting, three things that are interesting, actually, in about 20 minutes on your way to work. So come check us out at Commute the Podcast.
Yeah, and with those reviews and posts, just make it real natural. You just put a 5-star review, you write how cool the show is, and then when you tag it, you just go, hey, everybody watching my feed, this is my very favorite podcast, and you should listen to it too. No matter what your fandom, they probably talk about it. So tell your friends. You know, it's easy. It's easy. Do it. And we're going to give away some gift cards next week for that. So, yeah, we'll see you guys then. Peace.
You stay classy, multiverse.